Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 25. Emmeline had worked hard to not make the Wednesday be the center of her monthly farmer's wife column, although she'd mentioned it from time to time, mostly to establish herself as an everywoman type, as opposed to, say, some sort of Edith Wharton with a needle. Now, truth be told, Emmeline rather liked the thought of being a novelist, especially one as wealthy as Wharton, and she rather liked the thought of having grown up wealthy in the New York of the Gilded Age, as opposed to working class in the Emporia of the Progressive Era. Not that she had anything against progress, she just liked money more. She glanced at her hands on the typewriter and had to admit they didn't look like a wealthy woman's hands, no matter how much money she had in the bank. If she'd grown up in Edith Wharton's New York, Emmeline supposed she would have worn gloves from early childhood as a matter of course. As it was, she'd been 13 the first time she pulled a glove on, after her Aunt Margaret had taken up residence with her family and insisted Emmeline behave like a lady. But other than Sunday services and society events, she'd never had much use for gloves. Certainly no one wore them to school. Perhaps they had in the more upper-crust circles, but not in the part of Emporia where Emmeline had grown up. And now she had the hands to prove it. Emmeline sighed. The fact was, at age 39, it wasn't just her hands that were starting to look old. No matter that she was careful to use cold cream on her face at night and skin tonic first thing in the morning, not to mention that she applied tissue cream 3 times a week to fight against wrinkles. There just seemed so little one could do to turn back the hands of time. But, she reminded herself, her fingers poised to begin typing, her readers were in the exact same position that she was, only worse. She herself hadn't stepped outside without gloves or hat since she'd married Thomas and had been lifted into an entirely new social strata, where women wore such things as a matter of course. But she knew her readers, many of whom spent a portion of their days outside, probably couldn't say the same. So perhaps she should look at the tiny lines that had begun to form around her eyes as a kind of gift. To write well, she believed, an author must not only sympathize with her reader, but to empathize, too. That's why Emmeline always enjoyed dropping mentions of the Wednesday Bee into her column whenever possible. She felt that it sent a message to her readers. See, I'm just like you. I like to gather with my friends to stitch. But she felt it her job to not just entertain her reader with a little friendly chit-chat, but also to educate, to inform. So she'd written about techniques and patterns, offered advice on how to choose fabric, both for color and for quality, and gave tips on caring for one's quilts. Yet if the letters she received, and she received more and more with each passing month, were any indication, what her readers wanted was more stories about Emmeline's bee. "I think Eula sounds like the kind of friend I'd like to have," a Mrs. Daniel Longley wrote from Red Wing, Minnesota. "So down-to-earth and sensible." "Has Dorothy considered growing indigo in a cold frame?" asked Eleanora Finster of Orange City, Iowa. "Indigo needs warm soil to thrive. It's worth the extra work for the beautiful dye it makes." "I admire your sister-in-law's gumption," praised Ithaca, New York's Millicent P. Chambers. "As many of your readers are well aware, a farmer's wife is a kind of businesswoman in her own right. Nice to see a woman get paid for her work for a change." "Please advise as to how Bess and Edwina share cooking duties," Mrs. Willis Van Michaels of Tulsa, Oklahoma, requested. I and a fellow widow are considering a similar living arrangement as theirs, but we would like to have a better idea about how to run our shared home. Not only were these sorts of questions and comments common, but so were requests to share photos of the quilts that the women made and photos of the women themselves. "Give the reader what she wants," Thomas had proclaimed at dinner the night before, when Emmeline had complained that she wasn't writing a gossip column, for heaven's sake. "That's a writer's job, isn't it?" Emmeline wasn't sure. Oh, to some extent, of course it was. She'd listened to Edith Hinton's advice to make her patterns less artistic and more practical. And the fact was, Emmeline was beginning to suspect that many of her readers were as knowledgeable as she was when it came to quilting, a stark contrast to the women who were ordering from the Quilting Company's catalog. According to Florence, the Quilting Company's most popular patterns were those best suited for beginners. So how to keep a reader's interest when your expertise on a topic might not be needed? Emmeline could see how stories about a group of friends who quilted together would be appreciated, especially by women who often lived at a distance from their friends and mothers and sisters. What if she posted a new block design each month? After all, even the most experienced quilter loved a new pattern, especially if it challenged and delighted her in equal parts, as well as a story that went along with it. A true story? Well, that would depend on the girls, of course. Emmeline supposed if the stories weren't too personal, no one would mind. She could ask Dorothy about the first quilt she ever made. Everyone liked those sorts of stories. Maybe she could tell the story of the first time Elise ever came to the bee, or the story Eula had told about the time a late frost was predicted and she and Dan had to burn all of Eula's old quilts and a few of the new in the middle of one of their fields, just so their tomato vines wouldn't freeze. It would take her back to her days as a cub reporter at the Daily Kansan, Emmeline thought as she began typing out more ideas for stories. She'd been the best interviewer on the staff. Even the editor, a hard-boiled senior who thought women in the newsroom was a sacrilege, had to admit it. Though he'd never think to promote her to writing about student government or campus issues. What fun to interview Florence or Bess, get all of those nitty-gritty details. "Let me tell you about the time my friend Eula set a quilt on fire to save her farm," she typed. "It breaks my heart to think about it, but as any regular reader of my column knows, Eula is the sort of person who does what's necessary, regardless of how it affects her personally." Well, there was no use in continuing until she got Eula's permission, Emmeline thought. But it wouldn't hurt to start designing a block pattern, which she could publish regardless. Perhaps she'd call it Fire and Ice. Pulling her pencil and sketchbook from the desk drawer, she began to draw. "I think your readers would enjoy reading about your life more than ours," Bess said when Emmeline put forth her proposition the next day at the Wednesday Bee. "They might like getting to know the person behind the photo, so to speak." "I'll certainly include my own stories as part of the mix," Emmeline assured her. "But from the letters I've received, it's clear my readers have grown fond of all of us and want more." "Can we read your column before you submit it, like the old days?" Bess asked as she rose to take her cake plate to the kitchen. "Have final say on what goes in it." Eula laughed. "Since when has Emmeline ever submitted a column without reading it to us first?" "You all are the best editors a writer could have," Emmeline declared. "At least a writer who's writing about quilts. You've saved me from publishing many an error." "Oh, surely you're exaggerating," Edwina said. "I can't think of even one since I've been a part of things."
"You're the smartest quilter I know,"
Elise whispered loudly from the rocking chair where she was attempting to get the baby to nap.
"I've learned so much from you, Mrs. Grangerfield."
Emmeline smiled at the girl, pleased to hear some of her old enthusiasm in her voice. "Please, dear, how many times have I told you to call me Emmeline?"
"I guess I just keep forgetting," Elise admitted. "You're just awfully formidable."
Formidable. Emmeline certainly liked the sound of that. She'd have to tell Florence, who once again was missing the bee because of a business meeting. You're welcome to write about me, Edwina offered. I've got a lifetime's worth of quilting tales.
Edwina. How could it be the end of June and Edwina was still part of the group?
It had been some time since Emmeline had received any sort of report from Beau. Was he making progress? Not that they discussed any particular scheme or plan. In fact, they hadn't discussed anything at all. Much had been implied, and Emmeline felt sure Beau had some intention of diverting Edwina's attention from the bee. But how? Perhaps she needed to get a bit more involved in the process.
Emmeline leaned toward the older woman.
I would love to hear one of your stories, Edwina. If Eula would give me the loan of a pencil and some paper, I'll take notes while you tell it. I used to be a reporter for the Daily Kansan. Did you know?
So you were a real girl reporter, Edwina exclaimed. How marvelous. No wonder you're such a fine writer. Years of practice.
Emmeline ignored the praise. She didn't want to start feeling fondly toward the old woman. It would get in the way of her plans, vague though they might be. Edwina took a moment to decide on which of her many stories she wanted to tell.
When you're as old as I am, ladies, you are a veritable novel. And if you've made as many quilts as I have, well, you know how it is. Every quilt tells a story.
Everyone murmured in agreement, and Emmeline said, That's why I think this idea for bringing more of our stories to the farmers' wives of America is so perfect. Everyone loves a good quilt story, and a good life story as well. And in our case, the two are so often intertwined. She held up her hand. Wait just a moment while I write that down. When she was done, Emmeline looked expectantly at Edwina. Are you ready, dear? Edwina gave a slight nod and began to speak while Emmeline took notes. Her story, Emmeline had to admit, was a good one, about the first quilt she'd made as a young wife. Trying to be frugal, one afternoon she'd asked their housekeeper to go through her husband's things and make a pile of any shirts and vests that didn't seem quite up to snuff. Charles, she knew, had a tendency to wear things until they were absolutely worn out. She'd been horrified on more than one occasion by his thread-worn collars. The next day I went into Charles's room to get the clothes and found quite a large pile of them stacked in a basket by the wardrobe, Edwina remembered. Now, truth be told, I'd seen pieces of his that were in worse condition, but I was rather pleased all the same that Molly had found these, as there were a variety of colors and patterns and textures. Plaid vests, blue percale shirts, some lovely white cottons that hadn't the least bit of yellow that comes from aging. You should have seen my scissors blazing across the fabric that day, girls. Faster than racehorses coming down the home stretch. I could get 2 quilts easily if I added scraps from my sewing basket, and I knew they would be the most beautiful quilts I, and perhaps anyone I knew, had ever made. One of them was a crossroads quilt, which was all the rage back then.
When exactly would this have been? Emmeline interrupted, wanting to get all the facts of the story straight.
Let's see. I was 20 or 21 at the time, so I'd say 1870 or thereabouts, Edwina supplied before continuing. The other quilt was a buzzard's roost. My sister had sent me the pattern from New York. Oh, the fun I had making those quilts. I had all the time in the world to work on them. This was before I had any children, mind you. So I stitched every minute I could and had both tops done in a matter of weeks. I was so proud of myself, and I couldn't wait to show Charles what I'd done. She stopped and shook her head. Oh, my dears, perhaps you can guess what happened. I was carrying the quilt tops up the stairs to show Charles, who was coming down the stairs, clearly unhappy about something. Please ask Molly what's taking so long with those clothes I left out for her to mend. Usually everything is back in my closet before the week's up. Well, I could have made something up or put my confession off for another time, perhaps when Charles was somewhat less agitated. But I decided I'd best tell the truth straight out. After all, I was standing there with the evidence of the crime in my hands.
You mean those were the wrong clothes? The ones that he was looking for?
Elise whispered from the corner. They were indeed, my dear. I'd taken the wrong basket. Charles had set that basket out, not Molly.
What happened to the clothes that were too old, that Molly was going to give to you for your quilts?
Elise asked. Charles had found that basket and thought that Molly must have been called away before she'd had a chance to hang the clothes up. He didn't want to trip over the basket if he had to get up in the middle of the night for some reason, so he put the clothes up himself and stored the basket away.
I find it interesting that he set out clothing to be mended, Bess said. You made it sound like he was a bit careless about his appearance.
Edwina's eyes reddened. He was trying to make it so that I would be proud to send him out into the world every morning. He'd gone through his clothes himself, looking for shirts and vests he thought could use some attention.
Oh, what a dear man, Bess exclaimed, a little teary-eyed herself. He was trying to make you happy, and look what happened.
He did get two lovely quilts, Emmeline said before she could stop herself. A reporter wasn't supposed to contribute to her own story.
Edwina smiled.
Yes, and we kept those quilts until they were practically in tatters. I'll say this, while Charles was angry in the moment, he recovered quickly and forgave me. And it was a story we laughed about for the rest of our time together. Absolutely worth the cost, Charles liked to say.
There was something soft about Edwina's features in that moment, Emmeline noticed, and suddenly she could see how the old woman must have looked as a young bride, so excited and hopeful, wanting to share her happiness with her husband, only to learn she'd made a terrible mistake. Emmeline could feel herself softening toward the woman. Perhaps Edwina wasn't so bad. Yes, she was a bit too sure of herself, a bit too self-possessed. But Emmeline supposed most formidable women were.
That's an absolutely marvelous story, she said, putting down her pencil. I know my readers will love it.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.